Welcome to the Spin Axis Podcast. I'm Eric Borzeski.
I'm Tyson Deskins.
I'm Nick. Hi, guys.
Our guest tonight, as you heard, is Nick. He's a fitter for Top Golf Company and a longtime plus handicap who describes himself to be in Morad recovery, 11 years sober. Hi, Nick.
I love that.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me.
Nick, thanks for coming on.
My pleasure.
Yeah. So, Nick, what's your background, briefly?
Got out of college, knew I wanted to teach golf. Worked at a couple of golf courses, one on the private side, one on the public side. Realized I'd have to work 40 hours in the pro shop before I could get out to the range to teach. And this was the early 90s, so I decided, I was really trying to get into the sciencey part of the game. And the manufacturers at the time just had more access to the data to learn about golf, just in general. And I knew if I tried the fitting thing that that would kind of feed that itch of mine a little bit. And I could get out of the pro shop and quit, counting sweaters and stuff like that. As much as I liked the teaching part, I didn't like running the golf tournaments and doing the stuff at the golf course. So the other thing, too, is when you work for a manufacturer, it's more stable than even if I had become a freelance teacher, where you have to teach to eat and you get health care and you get to play golf on the weekends. So that kind of stuff was really attractive to me. So I came over here and I was thinking I'll do this for a while, but then go back to teaching at some point. And I've never looked back. I've never left. It's been awesome.
That's awesome. And I think that's a common story, I would say, of guys who like to teach and guys who like the sciencey, nerdy sort of side of golf, right? Like, don't necessarily want to do the pro shop stuff. I just want to be involved in how do I make people better. So I think that's a pretty cool story.
Yeah, I think it's a kind of like teaching. Yeah. In the sense that you're trying to help people understand their golf games more.
Absolutely.
Even though you're not necessarily trying to change the position of the right elbow or something like that, you are trying to educate them about how they can play better golf and enjoy it better. So in that sense, it kind of feeds that part that I enjoy working with golfers, trying to help them enjoy a really tough game, make it a little bit easier on them and help them have a better time with it.
Yeah. So we have a list of questions and we'll just kind of go out of order since you kind of mentioned it.
Yeah.
How often does a fitting turn into a lesson? You have a background in instruction. You're a very good player yourself. You understand a lot more than a lot of people do about how the body works, how golf swing works, how it comes together. How often does a fitting turn into a lesson essentially? And what's that look like oftentimes?
So in my mind, it turns into a lesson every time.
Yeah.
Right. Because you can't help. You can't help but understand that when you watch someone make their first warm-up swing, the kind of obstacles that are going to prevent you from getting them to like a more efficient ball flight, just because the club, it's not a smart club. It doesn't deliver itself. So the club itself is kind of a slave to whatever numbers they're putting on the ball with it. And there's certain ways you can mitigate that with the club, but sometimes there's a pretty big limitation on what you can do. So immediately I know what those obstacles are going to be. So in my mind, I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to do to try to help them. But what I'm not going to do is say, Bill, if you did this with your stance, right? Or if I said, Bill, at the end of this, I'm going to tell you some things maybe you can talk to your instructor about that I'm seeing that maybe he doesn't have access to just based on the fancy gear that I have. I'm going to tell you that stuff. And Bill will be, well, can you tell me it now? And I go, I'm not going to tell you now. Because your next swing, you're going to try it. And the problem is he doesn't think he's going to, but he's going to. And especially with good players, they're going to say, well, he's just told me how I'm not a tour pro in a certain way. I'm going to fix that right now. And that's when a fitting can go really sideways on you. So I learned that lesson years and years ago. So I'm happy to tell them some things they can go talk to their pro about, but I'm going to get the fitting done first.
I like that. And I like, honestly, the honesty behind that answer, I think, is refreshing for me as an instructor. And I've dabbled in fittings, over the years. It's not sort of my business model. But I, as an instructor, I also wanted to understand some of that side of it so I can help players. Sometimes I will feel guilty for when I'm doing a fitting at almost turning it into a lesson.
Sure.
So to hear you say it's almost happening every time from somebody who does this and has done this a long time, like, as I said, that's very refreshing to me as a coach.
But you will do something like change a ball position or something?
Yeah, you got to keep it pretty simple. I mean, here's what you might do. I was working with a lady, really nice lady. This was years ago, but it stands out in my mind. I was working with a lady and she was hitting it not even on the front side of the hosel. She was hitting on the back side of the hosel. So it was coming off the back of the hosel and staying on the ground. So going on the ground left off the back of the hosel. And we were going to sit there for an hour and watch her do that.
Right.
Right. So this is like break glass in case of emergency time. Now, she also mentioned to me, you know, she goes, I have a question for you. I go, great, fire away. She goes, I really don't understand why you can't just give me a club that suits what I do. I went, Sandy, we're working on that club, but we're not there yet. We don't even have the technology yet to like mitigate the reverse hosel top just yet.
Right.
You know, I've got the propeller heads. They're hard at work on this stuff, but let's see if we can find the face here. Right. So you do a little bit of that just because you can't even start the fitting right with the ball on the ground like that. So you're going to do stuff like that, but I'm not necessarily going to take Mr. Havenkamp, who came with her. And then, you know, he's hitting down on it 5 degrees. I'm not necessarily going to try to mess with him too much to try to get him to level it out or anything. I will mention afterwards, hey, you've got a pro? He goes, yeah, I got a pro at my club that I work with once in a while. Yeah, here's some stuff you can mention to him. But I'm gonna try to make it as good as I can, giving him a different club.
I once saw a guy hit a ball, teed up driver, between his legs. He hit it so far off the inside of the hosel.
Yeah, it happens.
Did he think he hit it off the toe?
I don't know. It almost hit his toe.
Right. Yeah. So that would lead to another question I would have sort of on this same topic then. Like, should a player get fit when they're taking lessons, or should they wait after they've had some lessons and sort of ingrain something, in your opinion?
Well, I think, like you guys have mentioned before, I talked to Eric a little bit about this, you know, before we did this, is that, you know, the danger is that they never actually do get the fitting, right? So if you look at guys that play golf for a living, they're out there getting fit and changing clubs every week as they work with their coach, making swing changes as they're playing tournaments every week, right? So we're not all in that position of luxury quite, but I tell people that I fit, I go, hey, give me an idea what you're working on with your pro, just because I'm an ex-instructor. So I kind of, it would help me as the fitter to kind of know what you're trying to do. So let's set the golf club up to kind of help reward the swing you're trying to make. So let's do some of that, but let's not try to put the club so far out in front of you that it's dysfunctional now. And I make a deal with him. I go, I know, Bill, that you think you're going to change your lie angle 4 degrees from 2 degrees upright, 2 degrees flat in the next 2 months. Probably not going to happen. Let's go with 1 degree upright. And if you do that, come on back and see me. I'll bend the clubs flatter. I'll put a different shaft in the clubs. You know, we'll try something different. We can adjust it as you go. I think that sometimes the fear is that I'm buying the last set of golf clubs in my life. And it's like, no, you're going to buy a new set next year. Or if you want to adjust the set you're currently going to get, we can do that. We can adjust the clubs as you go. Let's try to make the clubs as good as we can now. If we need to change them, we can. And let's flow with it, man. That's what it comes down to for me.
Yeah. And so how much will you, if a guy's missing right, how much in a regular fitting should you make the club a little bit more upright so the face points a little bit more left? How much do you do tricks like that and stuff, and how much do you say, you know, you're leaving it to the right, you should get, you're working on that with your guy maybe? Yeah. But like,
yeah, well, that, yeah, so that's always the debate, is how much are we going to mask the errors versus expose the errors. So good players will tell you want the club set up pre-neutral so that it kind of exposes what they're doing, so the club's telling them exactly how they're delivering the club to the ball. And then for the amateurs, you're going to try to mask over some of the errors depending on what type of amateur it is. So if a guy comes in and goes, look, man, this is what it is. I'm going to play once a month with my buddies. I'm not going to take a lesson. I'm not going to hit any balls. Let's like help me, like medic, right? So like, give me all you got. What helps us is obviously the clubs are really adjustable. So I can take a club that I can set up pretty neutral, but also put quite a bit of draw bias in it. So I'll just tell them, hey, let's throw in some draw bias. If you ever change it, you can always move it back. And then I'll do the same thing with a pretty good amateur who's trying to make a swing better. I would say, let's set it neutral. If you need to go to the draw, you can. If you want to keep it neutral as more of a training tool, you can do that as well. So the way golf clubs are designed and the way we sell them now, all that adjustability, it does help someone have some choices after they buy it. You know, the thing's not glued together anymore. So you can always take your wrench out and twiddle the knobs as needed.
If you've been listening to this podcast, you probably already know the importance of doing things like centering your shot pattern between hazards off the tee, being properly aggressive into the greens, and knowing where and how you both gain and lose shots during your rounds of golf. Shot Pattern is the golf strategy GPS app that allows you to do those things and more in real time on the golf course. Shot Pattern's tournament legal display allows you to quickly overlay your shot dispersion on the hole in front of you to pick smarter targets and shoot lower scores. The practice mode has even more for you to learn and improve. SpinAxis listeners can learn more and receive 20% off a one-year subscription by visiting shotpattern.app/spinaxis. What's a common misconception that many players talk about when they're doing a fitting? What are misconceptions that you see? Like, I know one might be that people think, oh, I'm spinning this driver 4,000, just give me a shaft that's low spin or something like that. And that's not possible. So what are some common misconceptions?
Well, I think just based on people's understanding, you brought it up immediately, is that people's understanding of the different components of the club. Like if you look, separated the shaft and the head and you took those two basic components, the difference is that if someone comes in and they have a certain club head and you're going to change that club head a certain way, you can predict what you're probably going to see without looking like too much of an idiot. Like if they come in with a driver that's got 11 degrees aloft and they're launching it pretty high with a lot of spin, you can give him something with 9 degrees and you go, well, if you make anything even remotely, a swing that's even remotely the same as you just showed me, we're going to pretty reliably see the launch come out down about 2 degrees. We're going to see the spin drop about 600, assuming they kind of hit in the center of the face or somewhere in the same place on the club face. So it's predictive in that sense. So that makes it easier. And it also happens to be the component of the club that's driving the launch parameters the most. Now, shafts are like the dark voodoo science of fitting. Anyone that tells you that they can fit you over the internet and they can give you a shaft tip flex that's going to lower the spin a certain amount, the problem is that you just don't know how the people are going to react to the shaft. And we've done a lot of testing. And sometimes people do what the robot does with the shaft. And sometimes people do the opposite. You know, you give someone a stiffer shaft and it's supposed to lower the ball flight. Now, a robot may lower the ball flight 50 RPMs and a quarter of a degree when you go from like a super soft tip to a really stiff tip. But then you give it to a golfer and they go, you give them the stiffer tip shaft, fully expecting to see the launch and spin come down. And they do something with it that makes them hit it lower on the face. So it launches lower, but it spins a lot more. Or they clank it off the top of the head. Or they put the handle in a slightly different position at impact. Maybe it's slightly more loft because of the way they tried to make the shaft bend on the downswing sequence. So really what I tell people is, like, I'll have a good player that comes in and says, look, you've got like 20 shafts on your cart here. Without me hitting all of them, can't you just tell me where we should look and what's going to happen based on what you've seen me do? And I go, no, because I've been doing this long enough that I'm not going to do the disservice of guessing, because the shaft's right here. I'm just going to put it in your hands and watch you hit it. Now, we don't have to hit all 20, but if I give you a shaft with a certain configuration, we know what you do with it in about 5 minutes. And then that's something you can know going forward. And then we can understand this and we can kind of know what works for you, but we're not going to know until I put it in your hands and hit it. So it's a little bit more iterative that way with the shaft, whereas the club head's a little bit less of a guessing game.
Yeah.
Yeah. And as far as like the shaft goes, as a fitter, like, it doesn't take that many swings in the players. You can tell if the player is going to handle that or not, right?
Well, one of the big indicators that whatever the magic that's happening between a golfer with the sequencing and the way they load the shaft and unload the shaft and get it to the ball, whatever that magic voodoo is, one of the simple things is if you give a pretty decent golfer a shaft they haven't tried and they can't find the center of the face, that's a bad sign. Like if you leave it with a guy for 30 minutes, maybe he can start to find the center of the face. But if it takes him a while, you know, something between him and the shaft, something's not working well. He's not getting along with it for whatever reason. And so you pretty much put that one back in the cart and you can find another one pretty easily that he's going to hit more solid. And then you can start twiddling some more knobs. But hitting the ball in the center of the face, controlling hit location of the face, is such a critical thing for performance. And it's so linked to what's connecting you to the club bed, which is the shaft, that that's really the first thing you look at. And once you can kind of figure that goal out, you can move on to some of the sexier stuff like the launch and spin and the different versions within that same category of shaft.
Awesome.
Good. And Jason has joined us again. So hi, Jason.
Hey, Jason.
A question for you, Nick, is that how often do you see a player react to the club they were given, meaning like just a heavier shaft, they swing it very differently and so on? Is that what causes a lot of the, well, I think this might happen, but you never know?
Yeah, that
moments.
Yeah, for sure. That's some of the issue, is that some people are what we would call very shaft sensitive and some people are really shaft stupid. So I would be a shaft stupid guy. So if you give me a fancy color and it's about the right weight and flex, like you give me a 6X, doesn't need to be tipped, a little shorter than 45 inches, I'm probably going to like it. Like, I'm going to hit and go, yeah, it feels fine. Can you play golf with it? Yeah, I think so. Let's go. Feels pretty good to me. And I know this just through trial and error, but we also did testing where we did motion analysis years and years ago, and he would give me a bunch of different shafts, and I would onboard diagnostics on the golf club, and he'd give me the same club head, and I just wouldn't change my delivery at all. No matter what you did, you give me a 50 gram X, you give me a 70 gram stiff. It might change a little bit if you give me a lady shaft, but for the most part, I'm shaft stupid. So, and I know that about myself. Now, I'm pretty sensitive to the head, the club head stuff. Like, it needs to sit a certain way and look a certain way and feel a certain way for me.
Yeah, same.
Just if for me to be happy with it. But as far as the shaft, you can give me anything in the right range. I'm going to be pretty happy. Give me a few minutes to find my happy place with it, and we're going to be good. Other people, dramatic reactions to shaft. Like, I'll give a guy a shaft, and again, these are pretty good golfers, but I'll give a guy a shaft, and he'll go, I can't hit this thing. I mean, it's I don't know where it is in my swing. I don't feel what the shaft's doing. And this is this type of guy, which is really incredible. I mean, it's one thing for driver shafts. It's another thing when you give someone like a tour iron shaft, something for 120 to 130 grams, it's an X, and it's just not that different from the other ones. And you give it to them, and they'll go, this thing's way too handle stiff. Like, give them a Project X, and he goes, I can't. This thing, I can't even find the ball with this thing. And I go, are you, like, you wouldn't be able to, if you blindfolded me, I couldn't tell the difference. And this golfer is not necessarily, maybe he's a 6 handicap, but he's like, no, I can't hit this thing. Take this thing back. Give me something different. Right. So he's really shaft sensitive for whatever reason. And it has to do with kind of how he loads the shaft and how sensitive and what he thinks about when he's swinging the club and what he's sensitive to. And it's all dark voodoo, man. I don't know. What I want to do is give it to the guy, and he either likes it or he doesn't. And if he doesn't like it, we move on.
Yeah. It's almost like the blind grind testing stuff.
Yeah.
You know, you just give him that's the same thing, but you know the difference between from shaft to shaft.
Well, the funny part about it, based on whether you're shaft sensitive or not, would be we used to do some shaft R&D stuff ourselves in-house. So we'd have a bunch of black shafts with just serial numbers on them, and we had a shaft department, and they'd all be maybe you'd put like 8 shafts on a rack, and they'd all be painted black. They just had a sticker with a serial number on it. 2 would be the same but different torque, but they'd be same every other way. The next two would be different tip stiffnesses but same weight, same torque. 2 would be stiffer in the handle, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And what you would do is you would go through there and see if your testers, whether that be staff pros that are there visiting the site that we would want to get to test for us, or even internally, people that were pretty good at golf and were pretty good at giving us feedback on the club, just to see if they could tell the difference. And some people, we had this guy named, Clive, great guy, who's an R&D engineer guy, who's about 6 or 7 handicap, not a tour pro. And he could line them up. He could take those shafts and line them up exactly every time. And then I had tour pros that would come in and run through the test, and they would go, I really can't tell the difference except for this shaft number 3 is awesome. Whatever this is, can you guys just put it in my game? Or I'd go, sure, it's a regular flex. And you go, oh, never mind. No. Now that I know it's a regular, never mind.
I don't want it anymore.
Yeah, he loved it a second ago.
It's like people that can taste the difference between like Coke, bottle Coke,
yeah,
in a glass, in a pop bottle. Like, that's bonkers to me. Like, I can't taste that.
Yeah,
I'm sure there's people are, but
yeah, I mean, the bottom line is the tour pro wasn't shaft sensitive, and he just smoked a couple with it and said, this is it, man. This is the magic right here. I go, yeah, we can build that for you. And he goes, what is it? Yeah, it's pretty high torque. It's a regular flex. He goes, yeah, let's not do that.
Never all mind.
Right. Sounds good. Yep. Yeah.
It says carry on. Lady on the side.
Carry on. Cape. Yeah.
Right.
What's a funny story you got for us from a fitting?
Well, based on where I work, I'm lucky to work where I work, obviously, and I work with a lot of good players, mostly tour pros and college players, but we do work with some celebrity VIP type people that we like representing our products out in the celebrity tournaments. And obviously some people can get in because they know the right people, right? They have the right connections to get in. And so I think it was a friend of a celebrity person that came in, and his name, I don't remember his name. I like to call my imaginary fitties Bill, but because there's a lot of Bills out there, but it was Bill or something like that. And he was really honest with me. He was hitting, and he knew this is where all the pros came, and it's perfect balls and perfect turf. And there might've been a couple tour pros there at the time. And the poor guy is petrified. Right. And he was really honest with me about it. He was like, hey man, I'm really nervous about this. I'm not a good golfer. I go, don't worry about it, Bill. It's no problem, man. And I always had this thing. I told people, this was at least 15 years ago. I always had this thing where I told people that I could tell when they were nervous, and they would say it. And I would say, hey, you know what? Don't worry. I said, Bill, you can't do anything I haven't seen before. All right, here we go. So he was one of these guys that would kind of hit it off his back foot. We've seen this 100 times. He would kind of fall back off his back foot. And as he would fall back on his back foot and his follow through, he had a little bit of a recoil as well. So he would kind of pull the club back toward away from the target, right? And would be sitting there kind of posing with the club wrapped back around him on his right foot. And so he was trying to warm up. And I said, Bill, don't worry, man. You cannot do anything I haven't seen before. Relax. So he whiffs one of them, but doesn't whiff it on the recoil. So he collects it up in the cavity of the club. I don't know how he went over the ball and then got under the ball on the way back, but somehow, I don't know whether he let go of it with his left hand and went lower, but he gathered it up in the cavity and slung it past my head, about a foot past my head, gave me a haircut. There's a big plate glass window behind the range behind me, and it goes bang, ka-clang, ka-clang, ka-clang off the window. Everyone, the tour pros, the testers looking around like, what? How did we get a ball to hit the window? Did someone like scull it from the other side of the chipping green? Like, everyone's looking around, and he's looking at me like with saucers, right? His eyes are the size of saucers. He's petrified. And it was my proudest moment in terms of just professional composure, because I knew he was going to have a heart attack. I mean, internally, I want to just drop to the ground and start sobbing.
For sure.
And then walk out to my car and drive home, right? Because this is the life I've chosen for myself. But I sit there and I go, Bill, starting now, you can't do anything I haven't seen before.
Yeah,
so you can't. He kind of calmed down and found his happy place. But that was a new one.
That'll do it.
That'll do it. You can't let him know that you want to crawl in a hole and hide, right?
Yeah, you got it.
That's amazing. So listen, I think first off, Nick, thanks for joining us. Another great conversation. I think we could sit and talk about, you know, this topic for a couple of hours, as always.
I could talk your guys' ears off. Yeah,
100%. Sure. And maybe we'll have to do it again sometime so we can do that. So
let's do part two.
Absolutely. I just want to thank everybody for listening. And as always, share this with a friend. We'll see you next time.
And remember, you can find us on all social medias at The Spin Access and online at thespinaccess.com.
Take care. Get fit.